So, now my question is, what is this stuff? How does it work? How does it work? So, how can I explain what's happening to the traffic? And then how can I manage traffic? How can I, what rules can I apply? And well, basically there are two kinds of let's say expertise that are applied to traffic theory. The one is the engineers. So there is a branch of science, it's called traffic engineering. And traffic engineers write the rules to decide the infrastructure, lanes, how many lanes, one-way lane or two-way lanes, if to put a traffic light or roundabout, where's the right of the way, or they decide how long should a traffic light be red, how long should it be green, how are the traffic lights. So all these things belong to the expertise of the engineers. But also economists deal with the traffic because well, at the end of the day, traffic depends on individual decisions, people's decisions. People's decisions about when to leave from home, what kind of vehicle to buy, whether to go by public transport or by private transport. So these are all economic decisions also, or at least decisions that have an economic aspect to it. So so at the end, city administrators rely on traffic engineers and the transport companies to decide how to manage traffic, how to decide the prices, for example the parking prices. Should we use a parking fee of 50 cents or 1 euro, 2 euros, 3 euros per hour? And also, they decide on what kind of public transportation to provide. How many buses, or whether to build a tramway, or whether to build a metro. So again, these are economic decisions, economic and technical decisions. But in order to understand and to advise, policymakers to take decisions, we need to have an understanding of what's going on. So we need to understand, to model, we need also to forecast. Why is forecasting necessary? Well, we need to know what's going on. So what will be the next traffic, the next type of traffic? Will it be different from this one or not? And also we need to forecast the traffic impact of the urban planning decisions that we might take. For example, if we open a school in a certain area, let's say in our case, the university decided to leave the fellow Europa and to locate us for some time here in the region. Of course, that had an enormous traffic impact on the vehicles that come here, cars that come here, and the people that come here, so bus. So the bus supply and the schedule of the bus number 30 had to be adjusted for this change in demand. So any change that's happening in a city, like opening up a commercial center, new shops or closing shops or moving offices, moving schools, this needs to be, we need to forecast what's going to happen and then take the necessary policies, management policies. So, quite important to understand what's going on and to decide what as you also know, traffic creates problems. So traffic is necessary for life, and for a city without traffic will be a dead city. So we don't want a city without traffic. But we want a city that has good traffic. And we want a city that has traffic that does not create external issues. Like, for example, noise, pollution. So the quality of living in a city, of walking in a city, breathing in a city, is okay. So, what is a good traffic? What the examples they showed were examples of good traffic or not? Is it good traffic when there is no congestion? Yeah, you would go for that. No congestion, a traffic that flows. So, speed. What kind of speed? You think it's good? You have the good traffic, you have maximum speed, average speed, slow speed.
Average. Because it's dangerous for people.
There is a trade-off between speed and accidents.
And maybe in some area also more slow.
Slow down in some places. Okay.
Like near
hospitals.
Or hospitals. Mm-hmm.
So with limited speed in some areas. Flow is how many cars flow in a certain street. You want maximum flow, so full street. You prefer not so full, emptier, but not empty. So you want some flow, but not maximum flow. And so what's the optimal flow? What's the optimum level of flow? And also, we have at least two type of point of view to judge traffic, the private one and the social one. So the private one is, when I have to move somewhere, I want to be able to walk, have a bus, drive my car, drive my bicycle, drive my motorbike.
Find parking.
So that's the private point of view. Free parking or paid parking, full parking. You want to be able to park for free or to have to get set to pay for it. So that's the private. Okay. So if I'm a car driver because I live outside this, I like to come here with my car at the regular speed, and I want to be able to park here and possibly park for free, play at the weekend. If I can hear, I don't have a car because I live downtown and I'm not better than that, then I want to be able to come in by bus. So we have a conflict between should I allocate the street to the car or to the bus? Give the street to the car or the bus. Huh. So different private viewpoints have different priorities and issues. So of course there is a bit of a conflict, huh? Because if you live here, maybe you don't want other people from outside to come here and park your parking lots, because you want to be able to park because you live here. So find parking where you live. So there are different points of view, but then we have the social point of view. From the social point of view, what do we want? From a social point of view, as a society, as a city, if you are a city administration.
For the majority part of the people, how they are using the traffic, the infrastructure, for the schools, for hospitals, for jobs.
But
do you
want many roads? Or we want to have fewer roads and maybe have some restricted streets only enough for locals or...
Yeah, there is now a
30 kilometer per hour limit roads. So residential areas won't allow more than 30 kilometers.
So that's the social viewpoint.
If you are a newspaper, you want free parking or you want to impose a toll for parking, fee for parking?
No, that's the social people.
So I know one example from my country, in Belgrade, for example, in one, because it's also chaotic city, and some zones where you have to pay €5 for a month, and you have free space if you live there. So okay. If you don't live there, you have to pay, and you can stay maximum for 1 hour.
Okay.
For parking. So, so differentiated parking rules according to a resident or if you are not a resident.
So these are all questions, okay? And this is what traffic theory is about: understanding, modeling, in order to design optimal road network and to design efficient traffic regulators. So, people have been working on this since the beginning of the last century, especially with the advent of the car, individual, private car revolution. So they started working because roads got more congested. You see that the images of the cities at the end of the 1800s, at the end of the 19th century, you see that roads are empty. You see that there are no rules, people walk, but there is a carriage, but it basically walking in the middle of the road because there is almost no traffic, so very quiet, and so there were accidents at the time as well, the problem of traffic was not a real problem. With the advent of the private vehicles, of course the traffic increases and seems to be keep increasing. The richer we become, the more we want vehicles, we want our own private vehicles. No? Now in the Western countries, about 70% of the people own a car. So we have 70 cars for 100 people. So maybe only the kids or the people that don't have a driving license don't have a car, but the rest of the population have a car. So of course we have now we have a traffic problem. As I told you, the task is divided, and they work joined together, traffic engineers that, well, they take care more of the technical infrastructural details, so the technology, the traffic lights, the position, the timing, the roundabouts, one-way street, reserved lanes, space allocation, parking, and the economies as well. The economies, because traffic is depends from also from economic factors and from individual decisions. So from behavior, we have seen that. Well, Vietnam traffic is different because of the income level. Now, I'm sure Vietnam is developed, so maybe now we have more and less motorbikes. And also the car types change over time. So the richer you get, the better cars you can afford, the cleaner cars you can afford, the more efficient cars you can afford. So there is also an economic issue there. And so the economists have other tools. They have the tools of the price. So setting the taxes for purchasing the vehicles, you can have, in some countries you can have very strict regulations, high taxes on car purchasing, and fuel cost is another economic variable. Our decisions depend on how much it costs to go by car instead of going by bus and so on. Ticket costs, the bus tickets costs, the metro tickets costs obviously play a role, parking fares, rents and so on. Okay, so let's see. How they went along explaining traffic, modeling and explaining traffic. Well, first they started describing traffic, measuring traffic. So that's the first task. I want to measure something, to have an indicator of. Okay. So I start with three definitions. One is speed, the distance traveled per unit of time. So that's in kilometers per hour, usually. So how much distance can I travel within a certain time frame? Then we have density. Density is the number of vehicles per unit of space. So how many vehicles do I have in a unit of space? If the speed of space is in a kilometer, how many vehicles do I have in a kilometer? So we have seen in the traffic that we did in the videos, we have seen that the speed was quite limited. The density was very high. No? So traffic moved slow, but there were a lot of cars. The product of density and speed is flow, it's called flow. So flow is the number of vehicles passing through a unit of time. So how was the flow in the videos that we have seen? We had speed was quite slow, but density was very high. How was flow? Well, we have to, if we could measure it and see the speed, measure the speed, measure the density, and estimate the flow. Because the flow is a product of these two. In fact, if you, there is this three measurements are related, are connected. They can be derived from each other. So density is flow over speed. Because you have three dimensions: kilometers, hours, and the end vehicles. Three dimensions. So you can combine them. They are linked. Okay, so now we have this guy. He was an engineer. Grimschild was his name. That in the 1930s went about actually measuring traffic because he wanted to see what's the relationship between these three variables. Huh? So he went there with a camera, with a watch, and he measured speed, density, and flow. So he actually did it empirically. Of course, now we have much better equipment. So now we can, constantly measure these indicators in each city. For some time we had to do with cameras, but now it's actually possible to do it with electronic devices that measure, that capture the smartphone signal. Since people have smartphones and they carry them around, if you read the signal from the smartphones, then you can see where every individual is and how fast it moves. So if you measure the signal of the smartphones along the roads, you can see exactly life, the congestion levels, the speeds, the density, the flows. So we can have a real-time measurement of what's going on in a city. And that's very important, of course, because let's say that now, first of all, you can measure it properly and real-time. So you can have a description of what's going on in the traffic in Trieste on Monday, on Tuesday, early in the morning. So when traffic develops, when traffic then weighs down. And also you can see the impact of traffic management decisions that you can take and the city can take. So let's say the city decides to change the right of the way, so to make it to go from a two-way street to a one-way street, for example, or to change the direction, instead of going in one direction, you go in another direction. You can have on time, you can have a perfect description of what's going on with traffic. So now the measurements is much easier. But in the 20s it was done. It was solved. We used the equipment that this guy had available. Okay. And so he collected data and he came up with this observation. So this is the experimental evidence on speed and density. So he noticed that there is this inverse relationship between speed and density. As density increases, so the density is the number of vehicles that you have in a certain space, so per kilometer, for example, speed declines. Well, of course, of course, also, let's see if I have this video, because I had an interesting video, and maybe now it's proper to see it. No. I don't have it. Well, anyway. Yeah. No, I wanted to show you. I wanted to show you a video, but I don't have a video. I forgot it somewhere.
I want to show you that. Is it why speed decreases when the density increases? Like, if you have on a road, 1 kilometer road, if you have 10 cars, does the speed decrease or can we go with the same speed as in the previous phase where there were like 3 cars or something?
We have to decrease.
Why decrease? Huh? Because there was an experiment that showed that, unless I don't, unfortunately I don't have the video, there was this experiment that showed that if all cars have the same speed, so they keep the same distance, then they can all move at any speed. Let's say if everybody moves at so if you like, if you have 10 cars, okay, 100 kilometers or 1 kilometer, so one every 100 meters. Okay, so we have the cars are 100 meters apart. If they maintain the same speed, the speed can be 10 kilometers per hour, 20 kilometers per hour, but also 50, 80 kilometers per hour, if they drive at the same speed, maintaining the same distance between the cars. So theoretically it would be possible if all drivers were perfect drivers and they adjusted the speed to 100 and everyone moved it to 100, they can move at any speed, theoretically. Right? The problem is that nobody has to slow down because if one slows down, then the other one also needs to slow down. Huh? Then maybe the one that slows down accelerates, speeds up, and the other one is speed up. And I had this video, I forgot the talk, that showed that it's very difficult to keep the same speed, but not impossible. And what's interesting is that with the new cars, In the new cars, you can actually set the distance between your car and the car that is in front of you. So you can keep it constant. So theoretically, if cars were not driven by people, but were driven by computers, so autonomous cars, and you know there is a development towards autonomous cars, in autonomous cars, set at the same speed, they could keep the same, even increasing the density, they could keep the same speed. So these are cars driven by humans. And cars driven by humans, at the beginning they keep up the speed quite well, but then as density increases, the speed declines.
Please.
But
so the creation of the queue,
so
like it's because the people
must be different speed,
because
it's for the
turn. Like why the queue?
You have a queue.
A queue car, why?
Well, a queue, a moving queue, or a queue that stands still.
Like the one that is in the
queue. They were in the queue, so they decrease the speed.
Well, it increased the density. And the cars were not driven by computers, not by people.
So different speeds.
So different speeds. So if one slows down, everybody has to slow down.
Mm-hmm. More density.
Pardon?
And then there will be more density.
More than. Higher density that leads to lower speeds. But does this lead to higher flows or lower flows? If you increase density, does the flow increase or decrease?
Increase.
Well, yes empirically, he found that the flow increases up to a certain point, and then that is not for sure. So the flow is the density and speed. So if you are able to keep the speed constant and increase the density, increases the flow. Correct, no? And he finds that that happens up to 50 kilometers, up to 50 vehicles per kilometer. But then when you have more cars, then the flow here stabilizes and here tends to, seems to be declining. So this work, recent observations. So, extrapolating the pictures and drawing more regular mathematical equations, this seems to be the result. So, as density increases, speed decreases, and when density gets high enough, density can even slow down to zero. And so it seems that the relationship between density and flow is that density increases, flow increases up to a certain point. It reaches a maximum and then it declines. Now it's easy to connect these two graphs and to make a graph representing the relationship between speed and flow. Because here we have the speed, density increases, and the flow. So we start with the speed that is very high and the flow it's low, then the flow increases, then reaches the maximum, and then it drops down again. So, flow increases, gets to the maximum level, and then it goes down. It goes down as density increases, and then speed decreases. So this is another picture of the same relationship, and so here is more linear, so it's made it even simpler. Speed, density, flow, and flow and speed. So this is an empirical based relationship with cars driven by humans. If the cars were driven by computers, then it might be different. Might be that the speed is constant up to higher levels of density, and then maybe drops for security reasons, no? Because if you have, probably if you have too many cars, even with a computer, you do not want to get too close to the car, so maybe you drop the speed because the machine has to stop if something happens. So, but with humans, this is the relationship. Okay. Now, where do we want to be? What's the optimal level of traffic? That was one of our questions. What's the optimal traffic level? What's the best?
We could reach the maximum speed with maximum density.
So, in terms of flow, one idea, your idea, was also my idea, was to get the maximum flow. So, this level of density and speed. with this level of density and this speed, you obtain the maximum flow. You get. So the maximum flow means what? Means that you have this infrastructure and you use it to the to allow the optimal density, the optimal speed, and to get the maximum number of cars that pass through the road at a given time. So you don't want maximum density, because too many cars, then they slow down, and then the flow is too limited. You want something that gets you to here. So that means that you don't want an empty road. You don't want a too full road. You want a road that is full enough in order to allow.
Okay.
That's a possibility. Then we have also two important traffic equilibrium theorems or principles that were established, and they are quite interesting. The one, the first one says, the journey times in all routes actually used are equal. Each user non-cooperatively seeks to minimize his cost of transportation. Since each user chooses the route that is best, no user may lower his transportation cost through unilateral action. So, this principle states that in actual traffic, since the users, the drivers, take their best route. So let's imagine you have let's see if you can draw something. Do you have anything available? Of course not. Let's say you want to go from A to B. And let's say you want to have a straight route, or you have a much longer route. The principle says that if you let people decide, so freely decide, which road to use, in equilibrium, you get to from A to B with the same travel time. Because people, there will be some people that go for the straight route, from this one, okay? But as more people use the straight route, of course, then the speed decreases. So the speed decreases here. But then you have somebody that says, you know what? Here the speed is 50 kilometers. Here the speed with less cars can be 80 kilometers. So I take this other path. Somebody else does the same kind of reasoning, and they take also this road. So, Wardrop states that at the end of the day, in equilibrium, the transit time, the travel time, will be the same, because people distribute themselves between the two routes in such a way, then there is no advantage in one route instead of the other route. It's like, I guess, this is like when it happens that you are in a highway, you have a traffic accident, you have an exit, and you are there and say, what should I do? Should I brake here, go slow, or should I go take the exit and take a longer route and a Well, in equilibrium, at the end, the situation is equivalent because people take rational decisions and use the network at the optimal level. At the optimal level, at the optimal level, the travel speeds is the same. The travel time is the same. You know? The speed might be different, but the travel time is the same. So this is a very powerful idea that says, well, if when people decide, they use the infrastructure at their optimum level. So people take rational decisions and allocate themselves, and they make the best possible use of the infrastructure available, distributing themselves between the two different groups, streets. And that's called user's optimum or user's equilibrium. Word of second principle, it's different because deals with the system optimum. So not with the user's optimum, but with the system's optimum. We have a system optimum when at equilibrium, total travel time is at the minimum. So, what we want, it's something that also in your answer provided this kind of idea. You want a traffic that reaches the minimum total travel time. So minimum total travel time means that summing up all the travel time of all the users, you get the best level is the one that has the minimum total travel time. So it means that we have to strive for a traffic that is as efficient as possible. And efficiency means minimizing the global travel time. So that means implementing rules and regulations and also restrictions in order to reach the minimum travel time. So the question for the videos that I showed you is, those videos, what kind of results do they get? Do they get the maximum flow? So is speed versus density optimized in terms of getting the maximum flow? The users, they make use of all the possible solutions in order to get the minimum travel times from their point of view. But do we also reach a global minimum? So that the system, so the traffic regulators implemented reaches the minimum total travel time? Or do we have to enact some rules or regulations? For example, a traffic light, a right of the way, a separated lane, in order to improve the total, the global, the system efficiency. So those are the two ideas in order to improve traffic. So the first one, people decide and they make their best decisions. The second one, We need to strive for an optimum system, so a system that allows the total travel time to be minimized. And as you will see in a moment, the economist proposed the idea of marginal cost raw pricing in order to obtain the minimum social cost. And it's the same idea that is presented here. You want to obtain a minimum, but not in terms of the engineer talked about travel time, the economist talked about travel cost. Social cost. And you see that the difference has to do with the congestion externality. And in order to have an optimal level in terms of cost, you need to have an optimal charge in place. So you see that the economist, in the economist's idea, the optimum is reached only if the prices are correct. And the prices are correct when the costs, all costs, are internalized. So that the people can decide to make their decisions based on their priorities, their demand, and on the full costs of their decisions. So here we get into the economist point of view. The economist thinks in terms of people take decisions. We want people to take the best decisions, but in order to take the best decisions, as we know, we have to internalize externalities, because externalities are a market favor. Externalities make people's decisions wrong because they don't take into account the full cost. So let's develop that idea and then we stop. Oh no! First, I forgot we have this. I have to give you this example of an engineering model. This is a famous model. If you go into traffic analysis, you know, if you are involved in traffic decisions at the city level in some ways, you'll see that the engineers use this four-stage model. The four-stage model is a model where they have four steps. They take the generation step, distribution step, so generation model, distribution model, model split, mode choice model, and route assignment model. So an engineer says, let's start with why do we have traffic? So what generates traffic? Traffic is generated depending on how you use a city or a land. So where are the residences located? Where do people live? Where do they work? Where are the shopping centers? Where are the schools? So starting from a description of how the land is used, as a city is used, then you model how many trips go from origin A to destination B. Okay. So you have the generation first, then you have the distribution. The distribution is the description of all the flows between origin destination pairs. So how many people go from A to B, how many from A to C, from B to C. So collecting all the demand here, so basically it's demand. So the flows, the distribution, then you have the model split and model choice. Since from A to B you can go by car, by train, by bicycle, walking or so on. Here in this module you want to understand how people decide among different modes. And so what are the preferences and what are the drivers in people's decisions? What if I change the prices? What if I introduce, like you said, a party fee? How do the decisions change among using buses and bikes and cars and so on? So this happens here in this module, in the model split, multiple choice model. And after you have taken into account this aspect, you have the route assigned. Okay, I'll decide to use the car, so I'll go from A to B through this route, or I decide to use the bus, so I'll follow another route. So you have the route assignment, and the route assignment at the end gives you the traffic, the flows. And so this is the four-stage model. The four stages that are typically used to understand how the traffic is generated, distributed, with the modes and which routes are selected. Okay. And this usually is a cycle, so it's repeated until it converges. So we have a model. This is a model of traffic within an area, and you get an equilibrium in this description of traffic assignment. So this is basically what the engineers do. So they have software, and they model traffic this way, and then they apply their management decisions, policies, and so on, and decide on that. What is instead the economist reasoning? Well, the economist reasoning starts exactly from the same diagram, empirical diagrams about traffic. So speed, density, speed and flow, as we have seen before. But here is something new. Here is travel time that's taking into consideration. So not speed, but travel time. So the higher the speed that you have, the lower is the travel time. So you start from high speed, low travel time. You decrease speed, you increase travel time. And then travel time increases because speed decreases. So you go this way, and then here it turns because you reach the maximum here, the maximum flow, and then it turns down. Travel time increases, but also flow decreases because flow decreases and speed decreases. And travel time, speed decreases, travel time increases. So economists start from this description of how traffic behaves, and then they go from travel time to cost of time, because travel time is a disability. We don't want to spend too much time traveling, no? Travel time is a cost instead of doing something else, so it's an opportunity cost. So this is the same picture with the time cost. So here, instead of, so we went, you had speed and get time, but reverse it. Now we have cost. So this is the cost that is relevant for economic analysis, and the cost increases. So as you increase flow, you increase also the cost. So up to a certain point, time costs are
almost constant, and we call this part the free flow part of the curve. Free flow means that, well, it increases flow, but travel time does not increase, or the increase very moderately. So free flow. But then, as flow increases, and flow, remember, flow is speed and density, so density increases, speed reduces, time cost increase. Time cost increase and reach a maximum, a high level when you get to the maximum flow. Then, okay. This description of the curve regards the average cost, average time, average cost. But, as you know, optimality in economic terms regards marginal cost, not optimal cost. So this is average cost, but from the average cost function, we can also derive the function of the marginal cost function. So this will be the description of the marginal cost function. So let's redraw it differently. A simplified version of this one is the same, okay, but I have only these two curves, and I have the main curve, I don't have the rest. So this is the main curve, this is the average cost curve, and this is the marginal cost curve. So now we are in our territory with the marginal average cost and marginal cost functions. Okay, so we have here the free flow up to a certain point, and then as the flow increases, average cost increase and marginal cost increase. And this is the demand. And this is the demand. The demand for what? The demand for travel, of course. Demand for travel, for using the car. And so, when supply meets the demand cost, that means that we have an equilibrium. Why do we have an equilibrium? Well, because the decision to take a trip depends of how much utility you get from the trip, how much is the trip is worth for you. So this demand function describes the utility of the trip. How much does the trip is? How is the trip worth for you? Okay. So you don't want to go beyond a certain point, Qn, where the utility of the trip is higher than the cost that you would pay for the trip. So the cost is described by this function. So, in other terms, you have a road, you have to do a trip. Can I make this trip or not? Well, how important is it for me? It's described by the demand function. How much does it cost? In terms of time. Another cost. We can also add other costs, include other costs into, now, for example, fuel costs. We can include into the average cost function. So time and fuel costs, let's say. How much does it cost? Oh, it costs more than what's worth for me. Well, then I don't go. Maybe I postpone the trip. Maybe I use another means of transport. Maybe I stay at home. So I don't go up beyond this point. So I stop at Qn. Okay. And this is an equilibrium. So if it is more, if it's worth more, I use the road. If it not, if it doesn't work, is it not worth more, then I stay at home. I don't know. So this is an equilibrium point. Is it the optimal equilibrium point? No. Why? Because this is based on the average cost.
The optimal equilibrium point from the economics point of view is based on the marginal cost. Why? Why the total cost, let's start from the total cost. The total cost is the equal to the cost, the average cost, times the quantity, so the number of trips, Q. Q is the number of trips, or the flow, the number of cars, and CQ is the average cost. So this is the our total cost function. But let's now derive the marginal cost function. So what do we do? You take the derivative of the total cost function. So this is the total cost function, take the derivative. So let's start doing the derivative of this one. Well, the first one, you do the derivatives with respect to Q. So it's equal to CQ, C bracket Q. Huh? So this is the first part of the derivative. But then you have also to do the derivatives with the regards to the first one. And regards to the first member, it's what is it equal to? It's equal to the second member times the derivatives of the first member. And this is the derivative of the second member. So, you understand the derivatives, right? So I don't need to explain more. Understand? It's a derivative of a multiplication, and both terms have the Q inside. So you take the derivative of the, you can start from the second one, and the first one is not derived, and you take the derivative of the first one, and the second one is not derived, and you add them together. So this is the derivative of this term. Now, this is the marginal cost function. The marginal cost function is made up of two terms. The first one is CQ, so similar to the average cost. The second one is this part here, this member here, that is Q times the derivative of C over derivative of differentiated by Q. Is this positive or is this negative? That's an important question, because if it is positive, then the marginal cost lies above the average cost. If it is negative, it lies below the average cost. So, Q is positive. So, what we have to understand now is only what is delta C over delta Q. This is the change in cost, in the average cost function, when Q, this traffic law, increases. So that means, let's add a new car into this 1 kilometer street. What happens to the average cost? Well, simple, the average cost increases. Why? Because we have one more car. One more car makes everybody slow down because you have one more person into the street. So everybody slow down, and so the cost for everybody increases. So this term is positive, because positive and a positive derivative. So this term is positive, that means that the marginal cost curve lies above the average cost curve. Okay, is this a problem? And yes, it is a problem, because in economic terms, the optimal, it's when the marginal cost is equal to the price, so it's equal to the menu. So in economic terms, Q all Q is optimal, Q0, Q0 is optimal. Hmm? So this is the optimal traffic level. It's not Qn, the optimal traffic level. Hmm? And why is this optimal? Because this internalizes the full increase in cost, not only for the person, but for everybody that use the road in the same time. And this full cost is expressed by the change in the total cost, total for everybody, total cost, caused by an increase of one person entering into the street. So, we have an externality here, and the externality is related to the fact that when a person enters into the road, it affects the speed of all other persons that are in the road. So the inter-externality is generated by this interaction that there is in traffic between my decision and the effect that I produce on everybody else. So I decide to use the road, I take my car, I go on the road. My decision affects the speed of everybody, all the persons that are on the road. Do I take it into consideration? No. Why? Because I don't pay for it. It's their problem. They are slowed down. Huh? So that means that in this individual decision making is based on the average speed, the private effect of their decision. But individual decision making does not take into account the full effect, the social effect of their decision. And the social effect of their decision is to decrease the speed for everybody. And that's the cost of this, the decreasing the speed for everybody is this term, because it's the change in the cost for everybody multiplied by Q, that is the number of people that are in the street at that moment. Okay. So this term is crucial, because this term measures the externality, the external cost that an individual decision as on everybody else. So, the optimal level is this one, Q0, because in Q0, the price paid is equal to the social cost, to the marginal cost, marginal social cost that affects everybody. So, unless this equilibrium is reached, Q0, you get a deadweight loss. What is a deadweight loss? It's an amount that measures the extra cost that affect a society or the users due to the fact that the cost is higher than the benefits. So these are the benefits of increasing traffic from Q0 to Qn. These are the benefits, and these are the costs. So all this area, it's a loss, it's a welfare loss. In other terms, all this area is an excess congestion. It measures the economic impact of an excess congestion. So this is the optimal level of traffic from an economic point of view. And this is the market level of traffic. So, Qn is the unregulated, no-toll traffic equilibrium level that is produced by free and individuals' decisions. That they would reach this point. But this causes a dead weight loss because it does not take into account the impact that individual private decision have on the social cost. We have to reach this point. How do we do this? We have two possibilities. One is to say this road can have only up to Q0 cars. Okay? So, up to Q0 cars. So, you can have a rule saying in this road I don't allow more than Q0 cars. That's what one way. And this is everyday practice. You can have limited traffic zones. You cannot enter unless you are a resident. You cannot enter unless you are you have a business. Now you have a shop in that area. Or you can enter only from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock, but not early in the commuting times, in the rush hour. So you can have rules that do not allow you to enter into an area because we don't want to have more cars than Q0. And that's one way, by rules, regulations. Then there is another way, and the other way is through a charge, a toll, a tax. This is called road pricing or congestion pricing or cordon pricing. Yeah, there are several names, but the idea is that okay, you want to get into this road or in this way? Yeah, you can do it, but you have to pay. How much do they pay? You have to pay this amount. Why this amount? Because this amount increases the private cost up to the marginal cost. So with this amount, you get to have a level that equalizes the private cost to the social cost. So that means that this internalizes, we speak of internalization, internalizes the congestion cost, the social cost, the cost that our decision as a private users impose on others, due to the fact that a road is something that creates externalities, because my decision impacts everybody else's. And so this is the optimal congestion pricing level. Does this mean that here I don't have congestion? No, here there is congestion. Here there is no congestion, it's a free flow. But here I have congestion. So I still have a flow with congestion, but is an economically optimal congestion level. Why economically optimal congestion level? Because it equalizes the need for traffic with the social cost of traffic. So this is the social cost of traffic that is added to the private cost by having this toll, this charge, this price to the to the cost. This is another picture, simplified picture with the same ideas. You can recognize the tax. You can recognize the deadweight loss. Okay. And we stop here for today. Tomorrow we'll discuss how actually in the real world the cities have implemented these ideas. Because these ideas proposed by the economists still in the 50s, they were actually applied in different cities around the world. And the application that we are going to see in detail is the application that was made in Milan. So Milan together with London, with Stockholm, with Hong Kong, and with Singapore, actually applied this idea of paying to use a road. This is the idea, no? Road pricing, paying to use a road. And so we'll see how this was implemented and what there is, if this it worked or not. What result later? Okay. So this is it for today.